Maybe we'll assume that everyone's come now. So welcome everybody to this 9-day meditation retreat. Hopefully that Bianca has given you many of the instructions about this retreat centre. It's a very new retreat centre, very comfortable for each one of you. And for the first time it's comfortable for me too, because now I've just finished the teacher's cottage. So I have my own room instead of sleeping in the office, which is very nice. On these retreats, which I teach here, the aim is to lead you into having a very calm and peaceful mind. When the mind is calm and peaceful, first of all, can you all hear okay? In the back, could you put your hand up if you can hear okay? Okay. It's important to have a calm and peaceful mind. There's still a few more coming in. Because when the mind is calm and peaceful, when it's still, that's when you can see things as they truly are. But it's like a simile of a lake. If there's even a small number of ripples on the surface of the lake, it can never reflect the full moon and the stars perfectly. There'll always be some distortions in the image. That's the same way with the mind. When there's any ripples in it, you find it cannot actually see things clearly. But as the mind becomes more and more calm, more and more still, its power to have insight, to have strong mindfulness increases. So you begin to see more, be able to feel more deeply, be able to understand further. So the purpose of meditation is to, in order to get the mind to be still, so that you can actually see the truth of things. But it's getting the mind to be still is one of the hardest things for the human being to do. A lot of times because we try to make the mind still. You can imagine what would happen. I'll just use the simile of the water. It's one of the common similes which I use to show people the importance of stillness and how stillness is achieved. So when I have a glass of water, if I'm going to keep this glass of water still, if I can hold it and concentrate and focus, I will never be able to keep this water still. There'll always be some movement. And in fact, the more that I try, the more it moves. But of course, you all know the easy way to keep water still is actually to put it down, to let it go, to leave it alone. And then it becomes still all by itself. And that's actually what we do with the mind. To be able to learn how to let go, not to get involved, to be aware without reacting to this mind of ours. And if we can do that, the mind becomes still, all by itself. It becomes a very pleasant and very profound experience as you just watch to see how this mind could actually become very peaceful and very still. So during the next 9 days, I'm going to lead you into these skillful means to encourage you and help you let go and to watch that when you get out of the way, when you stop doing the meditation, when you stop controlling things, the mind becomes still, all by itself. Generally speaking, to let go of all wanting. It's one of the reasons we have a retreat in a simple place like this. Here you don't have to worry about your bills, you don't have to worry about the economy, you don't have to worry about your work, you don't have to worry about the food. Everything is laid on for you here. It's like a resort. When we first built this place, the disciples from Penang and Singapore and Malaysia, they would actually say there's only one thing missing from this place, and that's a golf course. Because they liked it as a resort. But it's comfortable because it means you have nothing to complain about. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to fix. It's all pretty perfect. And so by making it like this, the ability of your mind to want this and want that is taken away. We're trying to let go of all this wanting and all this controlling. There's a very powerful little statement which I like to repeat, which is that when you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. It's the wanting which stops us being at peace with things. It's the wanting which stops us enjoying this moment. It's the wanting which stops us actually investigating and seeing what this moment truly is. And so, another way of putting it is that we're meditating here to stop all wanting, so that we can really become peaceful and still. It is the wanting which disturbs the mind, which creates the waves and the ripples in the mind. And of course, you know, when you're here, you know, you don't want anything materially, everything is supplied to you. But we have not just ordinary materialism, we have what sometimes we call spiritual materialism. And spiritual materialism is wanting to get peaceful, wanting to see lights, wanting to become enlightened. And all of this stuff which is just a reflection of the way many people live in the world. They want to get on in the world. They want to achieve things. They want to get some degrees, distinctions. But here, please don't transfer that way of thinking to your meditation. Your meditation is not to achieve something, not to get some attainment you already have, or you haven't, sorry, so you can show it up to your friends. It's what my teacher used to say again and again. He said, we meditate not to attain things, but to let go of things. To see how much we can be still, how much we can empty out, how much we can be peaceful. Because every time you want something more, you know, whether it's a wonderful thing you want, but you want something more, it means you're not at peace. You're agitating your mind. You're disturbing the whole process. So part of this training, this practice here, is learning to notice just how all this wanting, what the Buddha called craving, leads to so much suffering. So one of the first basic teachings for this whole retreat is there are two types of meditation. And for those of you who think I'm talking about Samatha Vipassana, no. The two types of meditation which I love to teach are called Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. And this is using the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, a very basic teaching of Buddhism. The second noble truth is that craving leads to suffering. So if you're suffering in your meditation, you're not having any peace or happiness or contentment, if your meditation is a struggle, you have just been doing second noble truth meditation. It's the wrong type of meditation. If you're struggling and suffering, disappointed, bored, restless, and you're suffering, it means because you're wanting something. You're craving. It's called Second Noble Truth Meditation. Third Noble Truth Meditation is when you let go of craving. It leads to Nibbana. That's basic Buddhist teachings, Third Noble Truth. So if you can let go of craving, let go of wanting, you'll find it leads to this beautiful sense of peace. And freedom and happiness. This is what meditation is supposed to lead to. And you're experiencing that. So whenever you have a peaceful, calm meditation, please remember, well done, you have just been doing Third Noble Truth Meditation. Letting go of craving. It leads to peace. It's quite obvious when it's pointed out to you that all of the agitation, all of the suffering of your life all comes from wanting something. And what more do you want? In meditation, instead of actually following craving and just, you know, see if what you can achieve and what it feels like when you achieve it, we go in a totally different direction. Stop all this wanting to achieve things. Instead of wanting to go somewhere or get somewhere, see what it's like just being here. Because if you want something, you're not here. You're looking into some future, some fantasy, some idea of really what you want to get. And you don't really know what that is. For a lot of times, I sort of tease Buddhists, especially Western Buddhists. What are you a Buddhist for? What are you trying to get from being a Buddhist? You know, you're trying to get to enlightenment, nirvana. If that's what you're aiming for, have you got a clue what nirvana is? Do you really want to get to nirvana? It's like getting on a bus, not knowing what the destination is. Would anyone do that? You know, it may turn out to be not a nice place, and they wasted all this time. But you're only doing it on trust of other people saying nirvana is a great place to go to. And no one knows what it is, except a rock band. Actually, there is a hairdressing salon, sort of in Como, called Nirvana Hairdressing Salon. But that's actually where I get my hair done. But that type of idea is just another form of wanting and craving, wanting to get somewhere. And what really the Buddha meant by Nirvana is actually the end of craving, just being here. And just for a change, having no wants, no craving, no desires, nothing to attain, no place to go, nothing more to get, and just seeing what you already have, and learning how to be at peace and fully content with what you already have right now. That's called meditation. If you can maintain that mind state of not wanting, just letting things be, being content, just letting things disappear rather than trying to gain more things, you'll find you become more and more free, more and more peaceful, and the mind gets stronger and stronger and stronger. The reason why stillness works is this little way, which I'll be mentioning many of these things in more depth later on in this retreat. But years ago, I recognized that there were two parts to the mind. And of course, this is taught by the Buddha, the two types of what he called vijnana, the consciousness, and the sankhara, which is the doing, the active part of the mind. So half of your mind is very active, planning, wanting, doing, thinking, initiating reactions. That's the active part of the mind. The other half of the mind is a passive mind. It just knows. It can hear my voice, it can see, it can feel the body, it can even know the thoughts. It's a passive part, which just receives the information. What I call, for want of a better word, the knower. And the active mind I call the doer. And when you notice those two halves of the mind, you probably will recognize that most of the mental energy is used up by the doing mind. Always active, always thinking, always going somewhere, always something more to do, always consumed by so much business. So much so, there's hardly any energy left for the knower. The first part of the energy always gets taken by this doing mind. So much so that the knowing mind, consciousness, or if you want a better word for it, mindfulness, has got such a weak amount of energy, which means it's very dull. So a lot of times people think they're aware, but they're not. They're living in a cloud. It's not enough power to it. Just like those old flashlights I used to have years ago in Thailand. The batteries were so dead, you could hardly see with them. And when you get, you're lucky enough to get a new pair of batteries, it's amazing just how bright that flashlight could be. Just like most people's minds. The batteries inside your mind are so dead simply because you've been doing so much. You're worn out. But the mindfulness is very weak. But what happens in meditation? We don't encourage the doing mind. We just let things be. We don't react. We don't want. We don't crave. And after a while, the energy starts to come back into mindfulness. Remember, the energy can go two ways. You can go in reacting, doing, thinking, struggling, striving, or you can just go in just being aware without reacting. And after a while of doing letting go, just allowing things to be, you'll find that the mindfulness starts to get more energy. You literally wake up. You get more aware. You know the word the Buddha, what it really means, it's not enlightened one. As everyone who knows Pali recognizes, the word Buddha means the awakened one. It's a very beautiful word, awakened. Basically, you've woken up. The mindfulness is strong enough, powerful enough, energized enough to see deeply into things. To understand what I mean, there's another simile which I like giving at the beginning of a retreat, because again, it gives you a very clear understanding of what I'm talking about, how important stillness is to be able to see deeply, to see clearly. It's a famous simile of mine because it was from a personal experience of living up here. For those of you who don't know, this is our retreat centre. And just if you go outside of the gate of this retreat centre, 500 metres, you find the gate of our monastery on the opposite side of the road. So I've been living in that monastery for about 28 years now. 28 years? Yeah, I think that's about right. 28 years we started that monastery. And for the first about 7 or 8 years, every time I went up and down the hill, down to the main road at the bottom of the hill, was always in a vehicle. But it happened one day, it was a beautiful spring morning, and that particular morning, it was a sunny day, I had plenty of time, and so I decided to get out of the car and walk up that hillside. It was the first time in 7 years of living here I walked up the hill instead of being driven in a car. And as I was walking, it was a very strange experience because I could not recognize my surroundings. It was as if I was walking up that hillside for the very first time in my life. And that surprised me because it was 7 years I'd been living here. And I started seeing things I'd never noticed before. Rocks and trees and the little river in the valley. I wondered, why had I not noticed that before? 7 years and I hadn't seen it. And then I stopped. I stopped, stood perfectly still, and stared. And as I stared, the scenery changed again. I could see more than I'd ever expected to see. The lichen on the rocks. The little flowers poking up amongst the grass. Little details which I'd missed before. And one of the most surprising things of this experience, that what I see became ever more beautiful. It was delightful, even the colours. You know, just the ordinary grass, the green of the grass, was so many different shades of green. Some of it was brilliant. And the whole thing looked so delightful. I stood and stared for about maybe 4 or 5 minutes, just enjoying the scenery. But then I thought, why hadn't I noticed this before? Why had it taken me 7 years to notice the beauty of that hillside? So, as a monk, one of the advantages of being a monk, you have time. Time to contemplate these things, to work it out. You're not so busy. So I walked up the hill, and I started contemplating what had gone on. And of course, it's a very simple explanation, but the explanation really gave a wonderful simile of what meditation is all about. The explanation is just basic biology. That when you look at an object, the light hits the back of your eye, the retina, it's a chemical reaction. The problem is, if you look through the window of a car, which is speeding, one image forms on the back of your eye, but it doesn't fully form. Because another image comes up, dislodges the first, and another image, and a third image, a fourth image, a fifth image. The images come so fast that no one is fully formed. And the detail is just smudged out. Just like those days, I remember at school, we would develop our own photographs in the science lesson. If any of you have ever developed a photograph, you know, you see the photographic paper and you see as a chemical reaction happens, the image, you know, appears out of that piece of photographic paper. It takes a while. First as little shapes, and then you can work out sort of figures, and the colours become richer and richer as the chemical reaction sort of proceeds. You have to wait for, I don't know, a couple of minutes, 3 or 4 minutes sometimes, for the reaction to fully complete, so the colours are fully formed. And that's very similar, similar to what happens in your eye. So what was happening? Looking through the window of a car, even the colours weren't fully formed. They were washed out, pastel colours. But when I got out of the car and walked, my eye had more time to see. So not only did I see more detail, but the colours were richer. But when I stopped and stood perfectly still, only then could the image fully form. And you could see what was really out there. Not only that, the colours had time to really be full and rich. And that's why, standing still, you could actually see so much beauty in that hillside. And the colours were really rich and deep. The texture was there, the detail was there, it was delightful. And I realise that's so similar to the way we live our lives. Most of you live life as if looking through the window of a speeding car. We go so fast in our life. And we think we understand what's beyond that window. You know, the people we live with, you know, the life, even the street in which you live. If you haven't done this yet, I challenge you, when you go back home, walk to the end of the corner of your street. You may be like me, many years you've always gone up and down that street in a car. Walk along the street where you live, and you'll notice things which you've never seen before. And it's quite staggering how much you've missed, even in the street where you live. You can imagine, in this body and mind in which you live, how much you haven't seen because you've been going so fast. So here we slow down. We even maybe get perfectly still. And then your mind, all your senses, have the chance to fully feel and see what's really here. That's where things not only get deep, you have more insight, more powerful sensory impressions, but also it becomes very beautiful. This was one of the unexpected benefits, to me anyway, of meditation. It's not just, you know, philosophizing and getting great insights. It's also sheer happiness as well. Life becomes more beautiful when you slow down. You get more happiness. And at first I didn't realize what that was really all about until I go back to that simile of the doer and the knower. Because you do so much, you run so fast, you think so much. Because of that, our poor old mind gets tired. So the mindfulness is very weak. But stopping, slowing down, mindfulness gets more power, you wake up, and that mental energy is happiness. That's what it is. And many people know this. You get up in the morning and you're not worth talking to until you've had your first cup of coffee. Some people are like that, they're so grumpy and angry. Give them a cup of coffee and they're happy. Why is that? All that is a cup of coffee or a cup of tea is giving you a boost of energy. And when you're energized, you feel much happier. This is actually part of the nature of the brain. One of the reasons people are depressed and angry is because they're tired out. They're so frustrated, they've been struggling so hard in life, they've got no energy left. One of the reasons why people aren't happy. Or they get grumpy, angry, depressed or whatever. So, learn how to slow down and stop. Your mindfulness gets more powerful and you also get more happy. And that's important for me. Because I want you to be happy. And it's for a selfish reason. For the next 9 days, I'm going to be sitting up here looking at each one of you. At the moment you look quite miserable, it's very depressing. Hopefully by the end of this retreat you're smiling and happy, and that makes me happy too, because I have to look at you. So, if the meditation goes well, you feel that you've got more mindfulness, you're waking up more energized, you get more happiness. But it takes time. One of the nice things about having a 9-day retreat is you've got all the time you need. So one of the things I tell people, for the first few days, please sleep a lot. And don't feel guilty about sleeping in and taking a break. The reason I say that is because most people, the way you live your life, some of you have come from overseas, long trips, you know, struggle to get here, to get your time off work or time away from the family. Just even getting here, you know, you come with a deficit of energy, you're tired. So, be kind to the body. If you're kind to the body and you rest a bit, you find that the body actually feels better, it wakes up, and it feels more energized. The first teaching which the Buddha ever gave, just after his enlightenment, was called the middle way. To avoid extremes, to look after your body until you get this beautiful sense of comfort. Unfortunately, what most people do, it's weird, but it's true, you force the body too much, and the body gets very tense. When the body is that tense, it can never get into some deep meditation. I enjoy telling a story of a retreat which I gave in Sydney many, many years ago. And a lady came on that retreat. She was actually came about midnight, so I never saw her till the following morning, because she was an executive with a very, very busy life. And when she came the following morning, she apologized for coming late to the retreat. But she had so much work, it was a struggle to take a few days off, and so she had to get all of these, you know, loose odds and ends out of the way, get things prepared so she could actually leave her job for a few days. And even then, working till, you know, late at night, she still hadn't finished everything, but what the hell, she decided to go on a retreat. So she's a very busy lady. So I gave her the instructions for the first few days. Please sleep as much as you want. You have what we call sleep deficit. You're tired. And fortunately, she was smart enough to take my advice. So she would sleep until breakfast. She would never come out for the morning chanting or meditation. And after breakfast, she would go back to bed again until lunch. And after, by lunchtime, she would get up again, have her lunch, and then have a nap after lunch. What a great meditator that was. Because, you know, it really worked. For the first couple of days, she was hardly doing any meditation at all. She was catching up on sleep. But, you know, it's after 2 or 3 days, you know, her body felt really good, and she caught up, and she was relaxed. And so then she started doing some more meditation. And for the next 3 days, when she was meditating, she soon caught up with everybody else. But the last 3 days, oh, she really just flew ahead of everybody else. She was a star meditator at that retreat. Got very deep, peaceful, still meditation. Because she was very smart. She was being kind to her body. Working with the body. So one of the things you can do, one of the things which I've been suggesting the last few retreats I've taught here, is when you wake up in the morning, don't just think, I better get up now. And as if it's like being at school or in some army camp. Just ask your body and ask your mind, body, what do you want to do? Mind, what do you want to do? Ask. And if your body says, no, I want to go to sleep, go to sleep. Turn over, be kind to yourself. Isn't that a wonderful thing to be able to do? Where no one is actually telling you what to do. You know, we have this very, very good relationship with the Benedictine monks here in West Australia. There's only 2 monasteries in this area. The Benedictine monastery up at New Norcia and this monastery down here. We always meet with each other. We had a meeting last Thursday down in our monastery over the road. So all the Benedictine Catholic monks came, we were just chatting away. And one of the monks said, you know, it's such a wonderful thing to wake up in the morning and have nothing to do. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? So when you wake up tomorrow morning, just enjoy that. Wake up, I've got nothing to do today. Wow, brilliant. No shopping to do. No sort of kids to take to sport. No husband to look after. No cooking to do. I've got nothing to do tomorrow morning when you wake up. Isn't that beautiful? Enjoy that. A lot of you think, no, I've got things to do. I've got to meditate. I've got to get jhana. I've got to get my act together. I've got to do this. I've got to become enlightened. I've got to do... Oh, please, don't carry on like that. That's what you do in the rest of the life. Please learn how to relax. Remember, when you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. Learn how to let go. So for the first few days, you do really need to catch up. So if you feel like sleeping, sleep. Have a rest. When you wake up, you just wake up. And you'll find that, just like that lady, because you're being kind and sensitive to your body, you're being wise, you're being mindful of what your body needs, rather than having all these ideas what you think your body should do. You're asking your body, what do you really need? And ask your mind, what do you really need, mind? And then you're beginning to have the first type of mindfulness and kindness towards your body and mind. So please, don't be afraid of sleeping, which is one of the reasons when I designed this retreat centre, this is my baby, this retreat centre, I made sure that everybody has their own room. I know a couple of you are biking up together, but that's your fault. But everybody has got their own room, your own ensuite, so it's comfortable. Please enjoy it, that's what it's there for. And you'll find after a couple of days, you don't want, you ask your body and say, do you want to sleep? So I don't want to sleep anymore, I've had enough. Now I want to just be still. Ask your mind what it wants. I want everything, just to be here, enjoying this place. The only reason why people are agitated, the only reason why you want something and keep craving and keep doing things is because you don't know how to be happy where you are. What more do you want in life? You've got this beautiful centre here. Nice food, nice bed, nice ensuites. Don't have to work. What more do you want? This is Nibbana. You keep spoiling it all the time by wanting something else. So see if you can just let things be and enjoy this moment and see if you can let go of craving. That's what that Benedictine monk, isn't it wonderful to wake up this morning and have nothing to do, not wanting anything? One of the little meditation techniques, which I will introduce later on, is starting your meditation by remembering the most peaceful, happy time of your life so far. Not so the happiness, you know, when you sort of, you know, you're going on holiday to, you know, some exotic resort, not, you know, falling in love or having your first baby or whatever, but no, a more profound, deep spiritual peace and happiness. Where was that and what did it feel like? I remember many times in my life, perhaps the first time I remember just when I was about a 14-year-old schoolboy, and it was a half-term holiday, and at lunchtime I finished all my homework, and I went out of those school gates, had nothing to do, no responsibilities, no sort of appointments. I felt totally free. I could go wherever I wanted, do whatever I wanted to do, because I had no burdens and nobody or no appointments or no craving forcing me to do anything. I remember feeling so content and happy. I also remember later on in life the experience of being like a monk after 5 or 6 years as a monk in Thailand. In our tradition, we were allowed to go wandering. I leave the monastery and just go wandering wherever you want in Thailand. And because Thailand was a very faithful Buddhist country, you know, you could go to any village in the morning with your alms bowl and go on arms around. You'd always get something to eat. So you didn't have to worry about food. You know, wherever you reach the following day, you'd always get something to put in your tummy. And you could sleep out in the forest or in the paddy fields. It's very easy to do. So you had this beautiful life and absolute freedom. And you had to carry everything which you owned. You weren't allowed to keep any of your own personal stuff back in the monastery in store. That was not permitted. If it was yours and you wanted to keep it, you had to carry it with you. And of course, after a couple of days, you hardly carried much at all. You felt totally light and free. That was one of those experiences as a young monk, which I look back upon with such delight. Absolutely no responsibilities, no debts, no hardly any possessions. Everything you owned, you were carrying with you. You didn't need anything. You really felt like a bird, free to fly wherever you wanted. Such a beautiful feeling of freedom. You didn't need anything. Everything was there for you. You had a place to stay in the paddy fields. You had food to eat the following day. What more did you want in life? You had perfect freedom. And so those little experiences, and you may have had something like that, periods of total contentment, just happy to be here, wherever that happened to be. When in those few days, yeah, later on you had to work and make some more money or do things or whatever, but those moments in your life where you didn't want anything and you were perfectly enjoying where you were, who you were, who you were with, and what you were doing. Now you give an idea of what nirvana is. Freedom from desire. Contentment. Just happy to be here. That's what we do in meditation. Always being happy to be here rather than wanting to be somewhere else. So see if you can remember that during your meditation retreat. Look, it's been so hard to get here. Now you're here, enjoy it. When you want to be somewhere else, you find you can't enjoy this place. So the meditation is learning how to have more contentment at every moment, to want to be here. But when you are not content, that's where all the thinking comes from. All the thinking, the fantasizing, the planning, have you ever noticed all the thinking you do, how much of it is really necessary? Actually, I'd say none of it, zero. But many of you say, well, some of it is necessary. But so much of it, I think you'll all agree that most of it is totally rubbish. Why do you think about things? It's just an escape from being here. Now, people like to worry about all sorts of things. We're just joking today, you know, it's the 11th of the 11th, 2011 today. So we're thinking, you know, we're just having a joke in the monastery over the road, 11 minutes past 11 today must be the end of the world. That's where the word 11 comes from, it's hell and heaven. You take off the H's, 11. So we thought that's a very spooky number, 11 minutes past 11 on, you know, the 11th month. Of the 11th day of the 11th month, 2011. But you know, the world never ended. People are always worrying about the end of the world. The latest thing is actually 2012. What did they say? You said the 21st. When is it supposed to be Buddha Rakata? 21st of December. 21st of December, 2012, the end of the world. Why do people think like that? You know, because they just love worrying themselves stupid. I've been living long enough, over 60 now. I've gone through many ends of the world. And I'm still here. 1999 was Nostradamus. 2000 was Y2K. This guy in the United States said this year was April the 23rd or something. It was supposed to be the end of the world. Hasn't happened yet. And I guarantee it never will. But what's really interesting is, why do people like talking about that? Because they like worrying. They like thinking and planning and fantasizing. If they don't think about the future, they like thinking about the past. Why do you do that? What are you afraid of? Why can't you just let that all go and just be peaceful and be quiet? All that thinking comes from discontent and fear. So during this retreat, it's so safe in this place. You've got your own rooms and you've got keys, it's protected. There's hardly anyone around this part of the world. And you know, there's no dangerous animals around here. Well, maybe the kangaroos are dangerous. Of course, the kangaroos aren't dangerous at all. So you're perfectly safe here, nothing to worry about. So you can be totally at peace. You don't need to think about anything. The breakfast will be there. The lunch will be there. What do you need to worry about at all? So that way, you can learn how to be totally content. And you'll find, after a while, your thinking slows down. You don't have much to think about. That's why we try and arrange this place so it's very difficult to think. Even those of you who've got your mobile phones, it's very bad reception in this area. That's why we chose it. So you're stuffed. And hardly anyone can reach you, which is brilliant. So that means that you've got nothing else to do but just to learn how to be content. This is your holiday. So look, I guarantee if you don't contact your home, nothing goes wrong. If it did go wrong, it'd go wrong if you call them up anyway, so it doesn't really matter. It's totally unnecessary to worry about anything outside. This is your opportunity, 9 days of freedom, of peace, not having to think about anything. So enjoy every moment of that. You find if you're content, the mind becomes still. If you're discontent, you'll be restless, always going this way and that way, simply because you don't know how just to stop for a while and see where you are and appreciate it. It happens that way, it's just the nature of the mind. When you first stop, you stop, you know, going places, thinking and planning. I said it's like you come on your journey of your life and you come across a bench. You've got somewhere to sit down to stop all this coming and going, all this travelling. Have you ever noticed that what life actually is always going on to the next thing? Sometimes looking back to where you've come, you're always going places. That was some years ago. I was just being busy in our centre in Olamara, answering some telephones or getting some papers, because it's part of my job being an abbot administrating. And I was passing this man, this friend, and he said, "How are you, Ajahn Brahm?" And as I was passing by, I said, "I'm getting there." You ever use that phrase? "No, oh yeah, I'm getting there." And then he asked me, "Where's that?" And I actually stopped him. "My goodness, you're right." So isn't that life? You know, I'm always getting there, I'm always getting there. Where are you getting? I'll tell you where you're getting. You're getting to your coffin. That's the only place you're going to end up. So instead of trying to get there, I'm being here. So if you know people ask you, "How are you?" never say, "I'm getting there." Say, "I'm being here." And that changes the whole sort of attitude to your life. Instead of going places, you're experiencing where you are. Why is that so hard? A lot of times it's fear, what it's going to be like to stop, because you're not used to it. So face that fear. It's not a bad place being here. You're not such a bad person. You don't have to run away from yourself. Stay here for a while. And it's like on the journey of life, always going places, you stop. But the only place to stop is like on this stone bench. This is a stone bench simile. And the stone bench is just so hard and cold. It's not even smooth, it's lumpy. So it's not the best of things to sit on. It's sort of like going out into the forest here and sitting on a rock. It's never level, and it's cold and it's hard. But a strange thing happens when you stop and sit in this present moment, just being here. It's like sitting on this rock, and you find the longer you sit on it, the warmer it gets. Not just the warmer it gets more smooth. Not just smooth, it starts to get softer. The longer you sit on this rock, the more comfortable it becomes. And after about 15 or 20 minutes, it's just like sitting on an armchair, like your favourite armchair. It's just so cosy and soft. That's what it's like, doing nothing. At first it's a bit uncomfortable. You're not really quite sure whether this is the right place to be or whether I should really be doing this. But you stay in this present moment, stay letting go, doing nothing, just being here. And after a while you find this being here is actually quite nice. A little bit longer, actually being here is very nice. Actually being here is bloody nice. Why have I always been worrying about going somewhere else? And this place is as good as it gets. So that way you learn how to stop. And the longer you stop, the happier you are. The more strong is your mindfulness. The more you understand the nature of this life, the more wise and insightful you become. So please stop, like sitting on this stone bench. The longer you sit without doing things, the more comfortable it begets. Then you understand what meditation is. If you're on this retreat, there are no bells. I've got a little bell here. It's not really a bell because I don't like bells. That's terrible. So I've got this, like, this is one of those singing gongs. So here goes. It's much nicer when you come out of meditation to hear that. It's like the aliens have landed, but it's still quite nice. So there's no bells on this retreat. So there's no bells to wake you up in the morning. There's no bells to tell you to come to the hall to meditate or to tell you to stop your meditation. There's no bells which announce it's breakfast or it's lunch. It's amazing. You don't need bells to tell you it's breakfast. You all know. There's some things you don't need to be told it's breakfast time. When it comes to 7 o'clock, you'll know, you'll be there. I don't think there's anybody who's ever missed breakfast or lunch on these retreats because you know, they haven't know what time it is. Your body clock will tell you. But one of the reasons, there's no bell to tell you when to go to bed at night. One of the nice things about having no bells is that the meditation becomes natural rather than forced. So you sit down, or you do walking meditation, or you lie down, or you just go for a walk, enjoying the moment. And you sit down as long as you're peaceful and happy. But when it's time to come out of meditation, you just come out. 10 minutes, 2 hours, 3 hours, it's up to you. And you'll be actually very surprised that when there is no bells, there's no time, you can be peaceful for such a long time. And those of you who have thought, no, maybe half an hour, hour and a half is the longest meditation, you find yourself sitting for 3 hours and 4 hours. My God, something must be wrong with the clock. It can't have been 3 hours. But it is. Simply because you haven't been worrying about time. How much in your life have you been controlled in the prison of time? Always worrying about when you have to get up in the morning, going to work at a certain time, beating the traffic, having to go to that appointment. There's so much suffering in life, having to be a prisoner of time and always be under the control of time. The 9 days here, you're totally free. So you can go to bed whenever you like, get up whenever you like, meditate whenever you like. Isn't that a sense of beautiful freedom? You become natural then. I know that before, that when we started teaching retreats here in Perth, we had like schedules. And people wanted to know the schedule. Now, what time are we supposed to get up? What time is the talk? If you miss the talk, it's recorded. You can listen to it later. And some of you, you know, people like Rodney, you've heard all the talks so many times. Rodney, you know, if ever I'm sick and don't come here, Rodney, you can give the talk instead, because you know the talk probably better than I do. You've heard it so many times. Same with Daniel as well. So, you don't have to listen to the talks. What's more important is that you can be peaceful and still and relaxed. So please, see if you can develop that. Not so worried about time. So the schedules are not there. That is what we mean. I tell this terrible joke every time. That is what we mean by noble silence. No bell silence. And the second part of that terrible joke is If you practice like that, with Nobel silence, some of you might win the Nobel Peace Prize. You might actually get still for a change. You're not so controlled. So the whole thing becomes natural. And by natural, it's asking your body, how do you feel? Do you want to go to bed now? Do you want to carry on meditating? Your mind, you know, do you want to sort of, you know, watch the breath? Or do you just want to watch the body? Do you want to do some walking? What do you want to do? Or do you just want to go and, you know, have a cup of tea? What do you want? You ask the body and mind that. That's like being mindful of your body's needs, your mind's requirements. And it becomes very natural. And when we have schedules, at the end of the schedule, 9 o'clock or whatever, 9:30 or 10 o'clock, people go and sleep. And they would never sleep well because they were so afraid. I'd better sleep, you know, now because I've got to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And the fear of having to get up at a certain time made you not wanting to sleep. It made you tense. But now you can sleep whenever you want. You find you have much better sleeps when you don't have to get up at a certain time. When you don't have to meditate at a certain time. When you don't have to be at a certain place at a certain time. It takes all the stress out of your life. So be kind to yourself. Then you find, yeah, I want to meditate now. So you can come into this room at any time. When we didn't have schedules, people would meditate more. And they meditate because they wanted to, not because they had to. How much of your life do you do because you have to do these things? And how much of your life do you do because you want to do them? You enjoy doing them? You find that so much of our life is doing, you know, we don't want to do it, but we have to do it. So what type of life is that to live? So this retreat, you meditate when you want to. Enjoying it. Yeah, I want to meditate now. And then the meditation becomes really very pleasant, very happy. And you find you want to meditate a lot. Because it's actually great fun to do, just to be still, to be peaceful, not to want anything, just to be happy, be here. Sit here just doing nothing, being peaceful, blissing out. And that's what actually happens. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you, as well as the Nobel silence, is you see we have all these chairs in the back there. Again, now this I designed this center. Basically, it's my center here. Those chairs, we did some research to find out what the best chair is for meditation. They were specially made, sort of, you know, the height of the legs, the backing, everything to try. They were specially made, designed for meditation, not for other things. So, they're there for you. So please make use of them. Don't think that you're going to get to enlightenment quicker by sitting on the floor. If you really, really are interested and think that, you know, sitting on the hard concrete is going to get you enlightened quicker. Somebody recently made me this bed of nails. I think we got over there. So if you really want to get enlightened quicker, you can meditate on that if you really want to sort of go through pain and stuff like that. These are 4-inch nails poking up. It was a joke because when we were doing the teacher's cottage, I said, I haven't got a bed in there yet. And so what type of bed do you want, Ajahn Brahm? I said, I'm a tough monk. Get me a bed of nails like those ascetics in India have. It's only a joke, but there may be one. So, but you know, I like sharing with my fellow monks and sharing with you. So if any of you want to try that. No, look, you don't get enlightened quicker when you go through pain. That's stupid stuff. So if you are hurting, you know, sitting on the floor, get some more cushions, use some of these stools, or use a chair, or lean against the wall and put your feet out, whatever it is. Look after your body and make it comfortable. You'll be able to sit much longer. But when it comes to the posture of the body, the most important part of your physical posture, because sometimes people ask, how are you supposed to sit? What are you supposed to do? You know, do it like the Tibetans, or do it just like the Thais, or do it like I used to do at school, hands on your head. What are you supposed to do with your hands? It doesn't matter where you put your hands. It doesn't matter, you know, how you put your feet. It doesn't matter how your back is, whether it's back or straight or to the side. the only important part of your posture which really affects your meditation. The one you should really put most attention to, not your legs or your hands. The most important part of your posture is your face. That's a good posture. That's a bad posture. So please, look at your facial expression when you're meditating. And that says so much about the attitude you bring into meditation. And everybody knows this. You put a little smile on your face no matter what you're doing, and it becomes easier to do. A little smile when you're meditating just makes the meditation so much more fun. And even when you're struggling in your meditation, take your attention away from whatever you're watching and just put it on your face, on your mouth. And just make a smile. If you can't make one, fake one. It always works. And straight away that gives that little bit of happiness, relaxation, peace, kindness. And your meditation gets much, much better. You can try that. So I've given you, like, this evening, just a taste of what this meditation is going to be. And I'm going to take you on this journey, so I'm going to give lots of talks in the morning between 8 and 9. There are going to be interviews, not tomorrow, but we usually start on Sunday. And there's going to be the evening question and answers. Anyone has any question about, you know, Buddhism or meditation or anything, write it on a piece of paper outside, and in the evening I'll answer those questions to the best of my ability. And you can always have cheeky questions. We always get a few cheeky questions or funny questions. I don't mind. It's good fun. And that'll be in the evening. So there'll be plenty of what I call brainwashing for you all, to actually just try and get you to stop all this doing business and learn how to relax, be peaceful, be still, and have some happiness and peace in your meditation. And you'll find it works brilliantly well. Which is why these retreats are always overbooked with long waiting lists. They really work. So that's actually the retreats. That's actually some of the information. In the mornings I'll give more detailed information about how to meditate. People always keep asking, well, but what am I supposed to do? Just be here, stop doing things. But am I supposed to watch the breath? Am I supposed to do? What are you watching right now? That's good enough. So remember, just try and get the message. It's a very simple message which you can imply. Just be happy to be here, wherever that happens to be, as often as you can during the day. And that means that you are stopping all this craving and you're learning how to do Third Noble Truth meditation. Just being here, instead of wanting to go somewhere else, wanting to achieve things. And little by little, your mind will get still. The doing will be stopped. The knower, the mindfulness will be increased. You'll see more, become more awake. Meditation gets deeper, easier. Most importantly, happier. You have a wonderful time. So that's what we're here for. So I wish you all success. And for now, just take it easy. So any questions anyone has before we break to go to bed or whatever? If you want to go do some meditation now, one of the best ways of meditation on the first night is to do what I call meditating flat out. Okay, you get to know what I mean. Any questions anyone has? Okay, well, just if you feel like meditating, meditate. If you want to go